Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Whether this is her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct is everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know like Vilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to brand new on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Tech Stuff, a production from iHeartRadio. Hey there, and welcome to Tech Stuff. I'm your host, Jonathan Strickland. I'm an executive producer with iHeart Podcasts, and how the tech are you? So I had been working on a totally different episode for today, but then yesterday the U.S. Senate did what I originally said I thought they wouldn't do, which is that they passed a bill that mandates ByteDance, the Chinese company, must sell its subsidiary TikTok to some other entity that is not identified as a foreign adversary to the United States or face a ban across the nation. That bill is now going to President Biden's desk for his signature, which seems to be pretty much forthcoming. I mean, he said he was going to sign it into law. In fact, it may have already happened by the time I get this episode published. And then that means this bill will in fact become law. This is a huge moment in technology, in business, in politics, both domestic and international. And I figured it would make sense to kind of go through and talk through this. So first up, let's talk about ByteDance and TikTok, because we've learned some things about ByteDance in particular recently that really have shaped perspectives in very recent weeks. So let's start off with a guy named Zhang Yiming. He got his start working for a travel website in China called Kuxun, and he spent a brief period working for Microsoft, but then ventured out into the entrepreneurial landscape himself. So the traditional story is that he created various apps in an attempt to kind of find one that really stuck. And one of those was a real estate app, not too different from what you might see in an app like Zillow, right? But this one was called 99Fang, F-A-N-G. That app was not a success. It ended up eventually going out of business in a couple of years. But it would end up being really important to the TikTok story for multiple reasons. For one thing, engineers at 99Fang developed tools that were meant to help for search, as well as recommended real estate listings based upon user information, which, you know, a lot of that sounds fairly standard for a real estate app. But the story goes Zhang Yiming decided that maybe you could pair a recommendation algorithm that didn't work for real estate, but it would work for something like serving someone up news that, you know, you would learn about a user's behavior, their interests, the things that are important to them, and you could aggregate news for those users, and you could match people to content. Essentially, he was just thinking about how to best apply recommendation algorithms. How do you judge what someone likes, and then how do you keep them at your app by serving them the stuff that makes them stay there. How do you make that happen? So to that end, again, the traditional story goes, Zhang Yiming launched a news aggregator app called Toutiao. And he and his former college roommate, Liang Rubo, decided to found a company that would sort of be the umbrella corporation for the various apps they were developing. And this would become ByteDance. They sought seed money from investors, and then a company founded by an American politically conservative mega donor enters into the picture. So we're in around 2012 at this point. 99Fong really started around 2009. ByteDance starts around 2012. Now, the conservative mega donor is a fellow named Jeff Yass. And, you know, I get it. I know tons of y'all out there hate politics in your tech stories. But unfortunately, this time we have to include politics because it plays a huge part in what we're talking about. I mean, we're talking about a ban on TikTok, a legal ban. So we have to talk about politics. And Yass, in particular, has had a really huge impact on the TikTok story. So Yass co-founded an investment company called Susquehanna International Group with some of his fellow students at the State University of New York at Binghamton back in the 1970s. And this company would actually become wildly profitable. It would become one of the massive investors in the stock market here in the United States. And it would turn Yass into a billionaire in the process. So here we are in 2012, and Susquehanna International Group invests in this fledgling Chinese company called ByteDance, ultimately spending enough to purchase a 15% stake in the company. And you know, that's a healthy chunk of ownership. And today it represents a truly massive investment considering the stratospheric altitude that ByteDance's valuation would reach. So Yass is heavily invested in ByteDance, and some argue that the majority of Yass's estimated wealth is tied up with this investment. So he clearly has a huge incentive to protect ByteDance. That's where his billions of dollars are tied up. Now, moreover, the New York Times published a piece not too long ago about some court records that were accidentally made public. These records relate to a lawsuit in which some former 99Fong engineers allege that their work has been repurposed to power ByteDance's various apps, most notably TikTok, and that these engineers were not fairly compensated for the use of their work. The court records show that Susquehanna had invested in 99Fong. So Susquehanna's involvement, and thus Jeff Yass's involvement with Zhang Yiming and TikTok and ByteDance, has gone much further back than was first known. This goes back to 2009. So Susquehanna apparently invests in 99Fong, but that app, like I said, went belly up. And then, according to these court documents, Susquehanna essentially created ByteDance and put Zhang Yiming in charge of it. So in other words, the court records say the origin story for ByteDance is not the same thing as what has been generally believed, and that Susquehanna wasn't just a passive investor in this Chinese company, but actually took a very prominent role in the creation of ByteDance itself. Anyway, those court records were never meant to be made public. They should not have been made public. So the court subsequently removed those records from public access, but not before the New York Times was able to review them and publish an article about them. So now let's move on. So ByteDance begins to form in 2012. It's based in China, and we're still quite a ways out from TikTok at this point. TikTok's own history is very convoluted. For one thing, it's really the story of a few apps kind of merging together, Voltron style, to create what we know of as TikTok today. One of those apps was called Musical.ly, or Musical.ly. And some of y'all might even remember that app. I remember it was really big with some of my actor friends back in, you know, 2015 or so. This app was originally founded by Luyu Yang and Alex Zhu in China. And the app started off originally that they wanted to create an app, a totally different app, not Musical.ly. They wanted to make an app that was an educational tool, something that could deliver short, informative lectures and such to users. But they found that folks didn't want no learning, so they decided to change directions. And they made an app designed for very short-form video content that you could create and share short form videos, or you could browse short form videos, and that these would be, you know, less than a minute long, somewhere between 15 seconds and 60 seconds. And they included the ability for users to post videos with specific music clips. They had a library of music clips. So it was kind of like adding a soundtrack to your video content. And this led to people using Musical.ly to post lip-syncing videos. That's really where the app took off. It also coincided with a popular lip-syncing program that was happening in the United States at the time. So again, when I say it got really popular, the app really got popular in America. In China, it actually didn't move the needle very much at all. So with the American market going banana for lip-syncing videos, the founders decided to establish an office in the good old US of A. So they did so in Santa Monica, California. This is kind of where the heart of TikTok being an American company comes in. So they create this office in Santa Monica. The app continues to go incredibly popular. At one point, an estimated half of all U.S. teens were using Musical.ly, and it became the number one app on the iOS App Store. So it was a really big deal. Meanwhile, back in China, ByteDance was working on kind of a similar app, not the exact same thing as Musical.ly, but along the same lines. And they called it Douyin, which, from what I understand, means shaking sound. And a cursory description of Douyin makes it sound an awful lot like TikTok. It's an app that lets users create and browse short-form videos, often ones that include popular music in the background. Douyin, though, also allows people to live stream, which you can do on TikTok now, too, or, you know, watch a live stream, not just to do one yourself. And Douyin also has some kind of incredible advanced features that are not in TikTok, like being able to search videos based on the face of someone who's appearing in the video you're watching, or being able to purchase goods that are featured in one of those videos just through a couple of presses at the screen, or even like to book a stay in a resort or a hotel that is featured in a video. And as you would imagine, it also, as a Chinese app, has incredibly tight restrictions on the type of content that you can post there. Essentially, anything that would bring into question the authority or legitimacy of China's government is strictly forbidden. As it would later turn out, that kind of stuff would sort of be forbidden on TikTok as well. We're going to have to come back to that in a bit. So in September 2017, ByteDance launches TikTok, which is a sister app to Douyin. It's the international version of Douyin, and as such, it doesn't have all the features and it doesn't have all the restrictions that Douyin has. But the company had also become aware of Musical.ly, and there was this clear market in America that was just waiting for exploitation, and Musical.ly had already tapped into it, right? It makes way more sense. If we can get Musical.ly and we can get access to that, then we get access to those users and we don't have to build up our audience from scratch. So ByteDance, through its subsidiary, Toutiao, makes an offer to acquire Musical.ly in November 2017. Now, the price tag was not made public, but estimates put it somewhere in the neighborhood of $800 million to 1 billion smackaroos, which is a princely sum indeed. Now, at the time, Musical.ly released a statement that said the company would continue to operate independently in the United States while, in the words of a TechCrunch article, quote, taking advantage of the distribution and tech that its new parent offers, end quote. In reality, things would get a bit murkier. ByteDance intended to leverage the recommendation algorithm that it had developed for Toutiao, possibly by taking it from 99Fong, although the company would dispute this, and then incorporate this recommendation algorithm into the app Musical.ly in order to supercharge it and to tap into that massive audience. And they decided that it made more sense to fold Musical.ly into the company's own efforts to launch TikTok. So ByteDance made the call to merge these apps together and to drop the Musical.ly name in the process and instead use the name TikTok. That was a pretty gutsy move in America, right? Because Musical.ly was young, but it was firmly established as a brand already, at least for its target audience. So making a change like that was risky. And really, you could say TikTok was kind of the product of three different apps. You had Musical.ly, you had Douyin, and you had the original version of TikTok, the international variant of Douyin. ByteDance would make great use of its recommendation algorithm on the new app. And this is the algorithm that the engineers who worked for 99Fong claims came from their work, which is a claim, again, that ByteDance continues to dispute, as well as Susquehanna International Group. They dispute it as well. That, again, was found in those court records. So TikTok essentially becomes a thing officially in early 2018. When we come back, we'll shift over to politics again for a bit, because unfortunately, that's what this whole mess revolves around. But first, let's take a quick break to thank our sponsors.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Rosie, somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned. It feels so good.
It does. And like always, we'll be here every week covering the wide world of TV, movies, comics, and geek culture.
That's right. We'll be talking about Batman, heroes of that stature, and of course, we'll be inviting our friends in the industry to come geek out with us and share stories. We'll hear from TV writers, from actors, comics creators, pop culture critics, and more.
Nothing is off the table, because geek culture is pop culture, and we can't wait to share our love of it all with you every single week.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back. Let's plunge on into the political bit of the story. And that all gets started in China itself. So back in the mid-2010s, China started to pass laws that were meant to tighten up national security in various ways. And that included stuff like, you know, cybersecurity laws and cracking down on digital espionage, you know, that kind of stuff. And in 2017, China passed a law called the National Intelligence Law of the People's Republic of China. At least that's the Western translation of this law. And the law covers a lot of ground, actually, but the bit that really sticks out, at least with regard to, you know, the TikTok mess, would really be Articles 7 and 10. So Article 7 states that all Chinese citizens and companies and organizations are to cooperate in intelligence gathering efforts. And that seems to mean that if the Chinese government wants information on something, and a Chinese company has access to this information, that company is obligated to hand it over to the government. Article 10 says that that goes for you too, companies that are owned by Chinese interests but are actually operating overseas. So essentially, the law says it doesn't matter if the business practices are outside of China or not. If the company that's conducting these matters ultimately is a Chinese company, then it is subject to this law, whether the business is happening inside China or someplace like the United States. Now, how and how frequently the Chinese government enforces this law isn't exactly clear. But the implication worries a lot of folks internationally for good reason. You know, Chinese companies make a lot of stuff, and a lot of that stuff ends up in complex, critical systems like telecommunications infrastructure, for example. So for that reason, countries like the United States began to reconsider the wisdom of allowing telecommunications companies to use Chinese components in their various systems out of fear that these companies could end up being complicit in spying on America on behalf of China, with or without that telecommunications company's, you know, knowledge or active cooperation, just by using these components that could be snooping on stuff. So we in the States started to see calls for telecommunications companies to remove and replace these Chinese components with stuff from other companies, and that got underway. All right, so China passes a law that seems to say any Chinese company, et cetera, has to comply with government requests to gather and share intelligence. ByteDance is a Chinese company, and TikTok is a ByteDance subsidiary. So our seed has been planted. Now let's pop on over to the old US of A. In 2018, the US government, led by President Donald Trump, got involved in a protracted trade war with China. And the issue at hand was really a trade deficit. And to go into the history of that would require a whole lot more time and expertise than I have. I would just do a bad job of describing it. But we can summarize it sloppily, I might add, by saying that for a few decades now, the United States imports from China drastically exceed its exports to China. We're bringing in more stuff from overseas than we are selling to overseas customers. So the worry is that ultimately this could have a huge negative impact on American economy and jobs, as well as national security. Whether that actually is the case is a lot more complicated, and I frankly would go dizzy trying to suss it all out. So Trump's administration sought to reverse the trade deficit trends, and in order to do that, his administration levied tariffs on Chinese imports. And again, going into whether or not this was actually a good idea or a bad idea would require a lot more time and knowledge than I possess. And I don't know ultimately if it was a good or bad idea, but I do know there were a lot of folks who were at least called experts in the field who debated that topic amongst themselves. So I don't know that there's a clear answer. Anyway, as you can imagine, the Chinese government was not thrilled about this move. The Chinese government responded by saying that Trump's actual goal wasn't to correct some sort of unbalanced trade playing field, but rather to directly attack China's economic growth. They're saying, oh, you're not trying to fix things, you just don't want us to succeed, so you're attacking us, which I'm pretty sure is not a really sincere argument, but that was the one that was put forth. Things got really complicated from an economic standpoint, but this provides a pretty good backdrop for what would come next. So we get up to the summer of 2020. This trade dispute has been going on for 2 years. President Trump says he wants to ban TikTok. He claimed he would do this by executive order, and in fact, he did issue an executive order to force ByteDance to either sell TikTok off or face a ban. In fact, for a while, he was just saying he was going to ban it. That was it. It was no sale. It was just going to be a ban. ByteDance approached Microsoft to potentially buy the U.S. portion of the TikTok business to kind of spin that off, and Microsoft could take control of it. But Trump initially rejected that move. But Microsoft would remain part of the conversation about a potential buyout for about another month. Like, this was happening in August of 2020. Things would move really fast. By September 2020, things got real messy. So again, Trump says he's going to ban the existence of TikTok in the United States. And the first time he said that was really toward the end of July 2020. But then literally just a few days later, Trump reverses his stance. And he says, you know what? I would allow for the sale of TikTok to an American company. Maybe we don't ban the app. Maybe we do allow it to get sold as long as it's to an American company. And he establishes a deadline of September 15th, 2020, and that if a suitable buyer did not emerge by that point, he would shut TikTok down with this ban by executive order. Now, why he wanted to ban TikTok? That's a lot harder to say, because it's hard to parse what he was trying to convey. He's difficult to understand at points. So generally speaking, it seemed that Trump believed that although TikTok belonged to a Chinese company, it was operating in the United States, and that was the issue, not from a national security point of view. In fact, at one point he said, quote, "It's a great asset, but it's not a great asset in the United States unless they have approval in the United States," end quote. I don't know what that means. I do not know what he was trying to communicate at this point, but he did seem to feel that the United States was owed some money for the success of TikTok. Right? Like, based on what I've read and what I've watched that was right around that time period, his argument largely boiled down to, hey, Americans are what pushed TikTok to incredible success, so America deserves some of that cheddar. Now, I don't really think that argument holds much water. You know, that's like saying to someone that because they were so successful in the company deserves all the credit. I don't think that really makes sense, but that is what I gathered from the material. I mean, that's based upon what Trump himself was saying. So again, this was not being conveyed in the context of national security. It was being conveyed in, they got big, so I want the money. Microsoft and Oracle were both in talks to acquire the US-based operations of TikTok from ByteDance. And for a while, it really did look like something along those lines was going to happen. But then TikTok filed some legal challenges to this executive order. And TikTok's arguments included an accusation that Trump's administration failed to produce any evidence that TikTok is actually a threat to national security. They're saying, like, yeah, you're saying that the conditions exist for this to be a threat to national security, but you failed to point at any actual evidence that it's happening. So just because something could happen doesn't mean that you have to ban it, right? Like, any one of you out there could get in your car and purposefully drive into crowds of people. But that doesn't mean the government has the right to come in and say, you know what, we revoked your driver's license because you could do this, even though you haven't done it. That's the same sort of thing. TikTok was saying, hey, you can't ban us on the basis of a threat to national security if you can't prove that we're a threat to national security. And TikTok would also bring up other arguments saying that this was an unconstitutional move in the first place, that it violated First and Fifth Amendment rights. And the ban would get moved back, like the deadline would be moved back a couple of times throughout this. And TikTok successfully petitioned a court for an injunction against the order to prevent the ban in late September 2020. So everything was on hold. Then we get to early November 2020, where the U.S. held its previous election, and President Trump lost that election, a matter of which there was some debate. Anyway, this obviously redirected political momentum at this point, right? The president who had issued this executive order is no longer going to be president after January 20th, 2021. So a lot of the pressure that had been on TikTok was alleviated, because now the guy who had made the order wasn't going to be in charge anymore. Biden would ultimately revoke that executive order with an executive order of his own. That happened in the summer of 2021, but he did call for an investigation into TikTok to actually determine if, in fact, there were any threats to national security present. And things kind of quieted down for at least a couple of months, right? Like, there was this investigation that was going to go on, but otherwise, things kind of calmed down. But then we get to the end of 2021. That's when we got the Facebook whistleblower event, where documents from within Facebook, now Meta, indicated that a lot of shady stuff was going on at a corporate level. And it generally raised concerns about social platforms across the spectrum, which included TikTok. So leaders were starting to raise some pretty tough questions about how these companies collect, use, and protect, or fail to protect, user information. And the specter of potential Chinese surveillance resurfaced. Now, over at TikTok, efforts were underway to distance the company from ByteDance, at least on surface appearances. So those efforts got the nickname Project Texas. The whole idea was that TikTok's U.S. operations would flow through servers that were owned and operated by Oracle. And Oracle is an American company that's based in Texas, thus the nickname Project Texas. This project had its roots in the days when Oracle was in consideration to acquire TikTok's U.S. operations from ByteDance. Now, that never happened. But the move to silo TikTok's U.S. data from the rest of international operations did continue, and the effort really ramped up in 2022. However, subsequent reporting by Fortune revealed that several former TikTok employees claimed the efforts were quote-unquote largely cosmetic. One former data scientist at TikTok named Evan Turner said that TikTok regularly received direction from ByteDance while outwardly posing as being largely independent of their parent company. So to outward appearances, they were saying, no, we're completely distinct. We are US-based and US-operated. But then behind the scenes, ByteDance was very much pulling the strings. Now, Turner claimed that while he regularly had to send reports to ByteDance, and that these reports included these spreadsheets that had tons of American user data on them, primarily, at least apparently, in an effort to refine the recommendation algorithm to drive better engagement. So, you know, that's not great. It's not great to hear that, but it's not quite a national security threat, right? If that's, in fact, all that was going on, was that this was an effort for engineers back at ByteDance to make even more addictive recommendation algorithms, that's not the same thing as collecting information for the purposes of surveillance. But, you know, we don't know if that's all that was going on. Actually, we don't even know if that was going on. That's been under dispute as well. TikTok's CEO, a man named Shaozi Chu, who originates from Singapore, which is not, despite what some American politicians appear to believe, part of China, he has appeared before Congress and claimed that TikTok is as American as apple pie, which I think is more Canadian than American, but whatever. And he has maintained that the company, TikTok, does not work closely with ByteDance. So there's definitely conflicting information going on here. He previously served as chief financial officer for ByteDance. So that also raises concerns, right? Like, yeah, he's from Singapore. He's not a Chinese citizen. But he was also the CFO for ByteDance, a Chinese company that does reserve a seat on its board for a member of the Chinese Communist Party. That in itself is not unusual for big companies in China. So the fear is that perhaps he's hiding the real relationship between the parent company and the subsidiary. In fact, you know, I mentioned earlier that law about intelligence in China, and I mentioned that it has sections that say part of the responsibility is that Chinese organizations have to gather intelligence, whether they are domestic or foreign, in operation. But they also are supposed to do so in secret. They're not supposed to admit or reveal that that's in fact happening. So you could make the argument that, well, of course he says TikTok doesn't gather information on behalf of ByteDance because he can't, because of the nature of the Chinese company, and that there's this law that says he cannot say that, even though he himself is not a Chinese citizen. He's the CEO of a company that is owned by a Chinese company. So it gets very complicated. But that's not exactly hard evidence of wrongdoing, right? You can't say for sure that because this is, you know, potentially possible, that it's really, you know, plausible or that it really is happening. And TikTok representatives have said that the various allegations that were made by former employees that were reported on in Fortune all related to times that existed before Project Texas was, you know, fully operational, and that those complaints are no longer relevant, that none of that actually applies to the TikTok of today. So you've got that too. All right, we're going to have to take another quick break. When we come back, I've got a lot more to say about the things that escalated and eventually led to this legislation that could potentially ban TikTok. But first, let's take another quick break.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Rosie, somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned. It feels so good.
It does. And like always, we'll be here every week covering the wide world of TV, movies, comics, and geek culture.
That's right. We'll be talking about Batman, heroes of that stature, and of course, we'll be inviting our friends in the industry to come geek out with us and share stories. We'll hear from TV writers, from actors, comics creators, pop culture critics, and more.
Nothing is off the table, because geek culture is pop culture, and we can't wait to share our love of it all with you every single week.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, we're back. So in late 2022, we had another scandal involving TikTok and ByteDance. Forbes published a piece that said that ByteDance had used TikTok to spy on Forbes journalists. And that ByteDance essentially had this list of journalists who were covering ByteDance, and they decided to use TikTok to figure out where these journalists had been going. They wanted to identify their IP addresses and then track these journalists. And this was supposedly in order to figure out who the journalists were meeting with within ByteDance, to find the source of internal leaks from within the company. And they were using TikTok as the data gathering tool to do this, which is kind of like the nightmare scenario, right? Here we have the smoking gun of ByteDance using access of TikTok to track people, including American citizens. So Forbes publishes these claims, and ByteDance responds by firing or forcing to resign the people who were connected to the tracking efforts within the company. So like the guy who supposedly oversaw the efforts and his direct boss, they left the company. Now, whether this was an indication that the decision to track journalists was actually localized to a lower spot on the corporate hierarchy, and thus like executive level, you know, C-suite level leaders had no knowledge of this project, or if this was like a cover-up where, you know, the people were fired in order to preserve plausible deniability, I don't know. But ByteDance's leadership was essentially saying this was unacceptable. We didn't approve this. You know, the executive leadership did not approve this. This was done by lower level management. We're dealing with it internally to make sure it never happens again. But whether that was sincere or not, it certainly did not win ByteDance or TikTok any confidence points in the United States. Now, we started to see movement in the U.S. as various government agencies and college campuses and some other organizations began to ban TikTok to some extent. So with government agencies, the usual move was to forbid staff from installing TikTok on government-owned devices. But employees could still have TikTok on their personal devices. Now, personally, I think this is entirely reasonable. I think it's the same as if you get a company-issued laptop and they say, hey, don't go installing Stardew Valley on this thing, because that's not what this is for. And I'm like, I think that's totally reasonable. It's not your computer. It belongs to the corporation, or in the case I'm talking about here, to the, you know, state or federal government. And therefore, they do have some authority over what should and should not be installed on that. Over at college campuses, the general approach to banning TikTok was to block TikTok traffic across college servers. So you could still access TikTok through cellular data or through some other Wi-Fi network. You just couldn't do it through college-operated Wi-Fi. So there were, you know, limits to these bans. In May 2023, the state of Montana became the first in the United States to ban TikTok. The state government argued that TikTok represented a threat to the private data and security of Montana's citizens, and that the Chinese government in general was a huge threat to national security. And the law stated that app stores that would continue to offer TikTok to Montana citizens could face a fine of up to $10,000 per day of violations. The law was due to take effect on January 1st, 2024. However, in November 2023, a federal judge blocked the law, citing concerns that Montana could be violating the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. And the judge argued that it was not the state of Montana's responsibility to determine matters of national security. That is a federal concern, not a state-level concern. And that further, the move in Montana appeared to have a greater connection to xenophobia than a legitimate threat. There was no evidence, again, shown that TikTok actually did represent a threat, just this kind of overall vague allegation. The First Amendment argument is one that is likely to come up again, assuming that Biden actually does sign this into law, which I believe he will. I mean, he said he would. As soon as it was announced that it had passed the Senate, he said he would sign it into law today. So again, by the time you hear this, that might already be the case. The American Civil Liberties Union, or ACLU, maintains that a ban on TikTok amounts to a violation of the First Amendment. So I just can't imagine a world in which TikTok, you know, kind of rolls over and says, oh, well, we had a good run. That's not going to happen. I mean, obviously, there's going to be a fight on this to force further decisions among the judicial branch about whether or not this law is constitutional. Anyway, the political move to ban TikTok grew in momentum in the back half of 2023 and into 2024. The House of Representatives passed a bill back in March that was to force ByteDance to divest itself of TikTok, the U.S. operations of TikTok, within 6 months or face a national ban, which would essentially amount to the United States government forcing app stores and communications networks from allowing TikTok traffic in the U.S. Kind of a grander scale of what we're seeing on college campuses, just going across the entire nation. That would not only stop new downloads of the app, but also all TikTok transmissions in general in the U.S., though I suppose you could use a VPN and connect to another country, like a server in another country, to get around some of that. But it's a bit of a hassle, and I don't know what that would do to your recommendation algorithm, honestly. I don't know if it varies from country to country. But anyway, at the time when the House first passed this bill, I thought that the U.S. Senate would be unlikely to follow suit. The deadline meant that a rapidly approaching ban would be really big news at the same time as the election cycle. And a TikTok ban is really an unpopular move among a significant population of U.S. citizens. You know, folks who could potentially vote, assuming that they're 18 or older. Or not vote. Like, just choose not to vote because they're ticked off. And I think a lot of senators worried that supporting a bill that would be, you know, coming into effect right around that time would be political suicide with elections coming up this coming November. But then U.S. Senator Maria Cantwell proposed that the House amend its approach and extend the deadline to 1 year instead of 6 months. Now, the reason given was that 1 year is a more reasonable timeline for ByteDance to secure a buyer for the company, which is true. I mean, 6 months is not much time. But some cynics were suggesting that another reason for this change would be it pushes the effects of the bill out beyond the election cycle. Whatever the justification, the U.S. House voted to extend that deadline, and then the House lumped the TikTok bill in with a bunch of other measures that were meant to provide aid to Ukraine and Israel. The bundle of bills then passed to the Senate. The Senate voted in favor of them, 79 in favor, 18 opposed, and Biden said he would sign the bill into law today, and the clock started ticking. So, some other things we do need to consider before we wrap up here. While much of the rhetoric around TikTok has centered on this threat to national security from an intelligence gathering perspective, you know, the idea that TikTok could be used to spy on America, there's another component that also deserves consideration, and that's the foreign control over domestic broadcast operations. So if you go all the way back to 1934, the United States has maintained that it's just not a good idea to allow a foreign government or a foreign government's representative, like a foreign-owned company, to have ownership of broadcast businesses within the United States. Now, this all started with radio licenses. The Communications Act of 1934, Section 310A, prohibits such a thing with foreign governments or its agents and radio licenses. Now, the concern is that a foreign-controlled communications entity could spread propaganda to the U.S. public, potentially threatening national security in the process. And so another aspect of this ban on TikTok resides in the company's potential role as a means to spread messages that benefit China's goals, whether that's to downplay China's own involvement in international affairs or to promote certain narratives that align with China's own strategies. It can include disrupting U.S. elections by attempting to either push people to support specific people whom China has deemed as being of greater benefit to China itself, or just discouraging people from participating in the democratic process at all. It could include shaping public opinion on matters ranging from trade to international conflicts, including stuff that's going on right now, like between Israel and Palestine. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of y'all out there are aware that China is very much using social platforms to do this kind of thing. Like, that's not under dispute. It is happening. But here's the deal. China's doing this on platforms that include ones that China does not have any control over. Agents working on behalf of China, either with or without the nation's direct support, have used platforms like X, you know, formerly known as Twitter, as well as Facebook and YouTube and others to spread this kind of messaging. And China does not have ownership in these companies, but they're still leveraging them to achieve that goal. So one could argue that whether China has a stake in TikTok or not ultimately is immaterial, because the problem exists either way. And that problem is much larger than who ultimately owns TikTok, which brings us to the whole issue of the U.S.'s overall terrible lack of data protection and privacy laws, but that's a matter for another episode. However, we do have to acknowledge that there has been evidence of China interfering with how TikTok promotes and shares videos relating to sensitive topics in China. Late last year, the Network Contagion Research Institute published a report that claimed that they analyzed hashtag ratios on TikTok, quote, across topics sensitive to the Chinese government, end quote, and compared them with ones from other social platforms. And they said that they found anomalies that could mean, quote, TikTok systematically promotes or demotes content on the basis of whether it is aligned with or opposed to the interests of the Chinese government, end quote. So, according to this research, it is possible that TikTok is a more active tool for China to spread messaging internationally or to suppress messages that it deems sensitive. And while China can leverage other platforms to try and spread messages, it doesn't have that level of control on other platforms beyond TikTok. So you could say that in that regard specifically, this is a very China-centered problem. Now we have to go back to Jeff Yass. So back in 2020, Donald Trump calls for a ban on TikTok, and his reasons for doing so are at best muddled. But he's really firm on the fact that he is gosh darn it gonna ban TikTok. But the ban gets postponed due to legal challenges, and Trump gets voted out, and the matter kind of fizzles. Now, as we have this new ban that's one backed by Congress and two supported by Joe Biden, Trump has spoken out against the ban. So why does he oppose a ban now when he was calling for one 4 years ago? Well, his reasons for opposing the ban are, I would argue, equally as muddled as his reasons calling for one in the first place. Generally, he seems to say we shouldn't ban TikTok because a lot of people happen to like it. And I mean, that's true. There are a lot of people who like TikTok, but I don't know that that's the argument you make to oppose a ban, but it's the one that he offered. Now, he has associated this ban with Joe Biden. Like, he's not so much saying why he thinks a ban's a bad idea. He's more concentrating on saying Biden is the one banning TikTok. So really, it seems to be a political maneuver. You know, TikTok is popular with a lot of people. Biden supports the legislation calling for the ban. So Trump wants to win the election in November. So you make sure your opponent is associated with a really unpopular bill. Never mind if you yourself initially called for the very same thing 4 years ago and did so by executive order. But another potential reason for Trump's change of heart goes back to Jeff Yass. So Jeff Yass is a mega donor to conservative campaigns. In fact, he's like the biggest donor to GOP campaigns in the United States. And he met with Trump back in March of this year. So the two people meet, the biggest donor to conservative campaigns in the United States and the presidential nominee for the GOP. At this point, Trump's tune regarding TikTok changes. Now, I'm not saying Trump changed his approach simply because a guy with exceedingly deep pockets, a guy whose wealth is heavily dependent upon ByteDance and by extension TikTok, told Trump that Trump needs to oppose the ban if he wants access to some of that sweet, sweet money. I'm not saying that happened. I'm just saying I wouldn't be at all surprised if this is a big part of it. Trump, as you might know, definitely needs the cash because it is way easier to spend other people's money when you owe courts hundreds of millions of dollars than it is to spend your own money. But yeah, it seems that a conservative billionaire who has most of his wealth tied up with a Chinese company is spending a lot of time, effort, and yes, money to fight off a threat to his fortune, and that the beneficiaries of his donations are eager to play a part in that. So it all comes down to money. And that's kind of where we're at. Now, you might wonder, what's my opinion on the whole thing in case it's not obvious? Well, I don't like TikTok, but I also don't necessarily think TikTok represents the really huge problem that other people do. Or rather, to clarify, I think TikTok is a problem, but it's a subset. It's a smaller problem in a much, much larger bubble that so far has gone largely unaddressed in the United States. That unless leaders take a look at the bigger picture of data privacy and security and they make some real changes, TikTok's ownership or even TikTok's existence is kind of not important, at least not from a national security level. Because I don't really think there's much that TikTok could do that other platforms aren't already doing as well. Like American platforms. And I mean, even like American platforms doing things that benefit China. So whether that's gathering bukus of information on every single user, as well as people those users interact with, whether they're on the platform or not, to the spread of propaganda and misinformation, to designing ways to capture attention and to hold it, potentially to the detriment of users and society in general, all of that is happening whether you snuff out TikTok or you allow it to continue. So killing TikTok doesn't fix the problem. It's like putting a little Band-Aid on a big old gaping wound. Now, I'm also not a big fan of the politics around this. That might surprise you considering how much time I spent on it, but I'm not. I find the whole politics thing incredibly distracting because to me, it feels like theater. It feels like it's a show that's being put on and it's focusing on an easy target. Also, a lot of the rhetoric around this starts to feel really xenophobic. Like, you know, there are legitimate reasons to worry about China's influence. There's no denying that. There are good reasons to worry about that. However, a lot of the messaging, a lot of the speeches, a lot of the conversations that we've seen, like the interrogations in Congress when you've got TikTok's CEO up there, they come across less about legitimate concerns about China and more, you know, kind of racist. And you know, there's obviously fuzzy ground here. Like, again, there are legitimate concerns, but the way they're being communicated doesn't come across as sincere. And then you start to worry that this is like watching a pro wrestling show where the face is getting the crowd to chant USA, USA, USA against a foreign character heel. It's not a good look. So again, the whole thing is a mess, and it's not ending here. We've got the legal challenges to look forward to, so to speak, and the outcome from that is far from certain. So I'm sure we will revisit this to find out, you know, will the U.S. ban TikTok? Will TikTok be forced to be spun off and sold to an American company? Or will the whole thing get dismissed on constitutional grounds? Or will something else entirely happen? I don't know. I'm not going to make any predictions at this point because the last one I made was that the Senate was not going to support this, and I was totes wrong about that. So we're dropping it off here, but I wanted to give the update and give the context and the understanding of all the things that are going on because it is a complicated subject. I hope all of you out there are well. I hope you are staying sane in this crazy world of ours, and I'll talk to you again really soon. Tech Stuff is an iHeartRadio production. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
It's brand new season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned.
And like always, we'll be here every week.
You'll hear from TV writers, actors, comics creators, pop culture critics.
Nothing is off the table.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.